Welcome to this Market Commentator podcast. My name is Ryk van die Kerk and my guest today is Philip Wards. He is a portfolio manager at PSG and he co-manages several of the PSG global funds. Philip, welcome to the show. Let's start with the global perspective. We are seeing some pretty dramatic global events that may impact long-term returns. We saw Brexit earlier this year and Donald Trump will move into the White House early next year. How difficult is it to manage a global fund in this environment?
Hello, Rex. First of all, thanks very much for having me on the show. I mean, as you rightfully said, it is a very tricky environment right now. But I guess in investing, it's always interesting times. And I think the bottom line of how we look at the world, we're not in a position to be able to forecast whether Brexit or Trump will happen. And what we're doing in this environment, we're doing exactly the same as we've been doing over the last few years in all our portfolios, of just taking a step back and looking at underlying valuations and fundamentals of asset classes and companies. And I think even more so than worrying about Trump or Brexit, I think there's a bigger shift happening in the world. And we've kind of seen it coming on, I guess, since the financial crisis over the last few years, where there's been an environment of extremely low growth and low interest rates and low inflation. And that's kind of really led to valuations that have become extremely excessive in the market, in certain parts of the market, but also resulted in mispricings in other areas of the market. And that's the kind of area where we at PSG have been fishing and looking at. So whether Brexit or Trump happens, it doesn't really impact our day-to-day life to a large extent.
But we have seen some, you know, significant changes, especially after Donald Trump's election as the new president. U.S. investors pulled around $11 billion U.S. dollars from bonds and they piled into shares and that drove up markets to record highs. Did you do anything special or also changed your strategy slightly when this happened?
No, not at all. And I mean, I got to stress here, we certainly didn't predict that Donald Trump was going to win the U.S. elections this year. But where we've been finding value in the market over the last couple of years, and especially this year, has been in those areas that have been impacted by low interest rates. You mentioned investors pulled money from bonds with bond yields adjusting by about 50 basis points. It's literally a case of we found value in that part of the market that, to our benefit, had a good performance since his election, but we certainly didn't change any of our positioning either before or after the election.
But are you excited about the prospects? Many people believe that we will see a stronger U.S. economy, and obviously that will impact asset pricing.
Absolutely. I mean, a stronger economy, U.S. economy, I guess, is good for the whole world. But especially for the equities that we hold in the portfolio, they will be benefiting from potentially a stronger U.S. economy, higher inflation, and higher interest rates. So certainly quite excited what it could bring. But I think at this point, it is just too early to really say what he's going to do. There's been a lot of words, and now we're going to see what happens in action.
Let's cross the Atlantic. MarketWatch.com, one of the premier market websites in the world, they did a poll amongst investors, and these investors said that their biggest concern for next year was a disintegration of the EU and the impact that may have on markets. How do you look at the Brexit and the potential impact on the EU?
Yeah, so we've looked at the EU and implications that it could bring in terms of Italian referendums, or currently the French elections are quite topical for next year, but we look at it more a case of what it would mean for opportunities ultimately. We are bottom-up stock pickers and investors, and we look at the whole globe for opportunities, but right now in Europe from a fundamental and underlying valuation, we haven't been that excited in terms of finding opportunities in the European Union itself. You mentioned Brexit. Once again, we look at stocks from an underlying basis, and actually post-Brexit, I actually went over to the UK to meet with some of the UK-focused management teams to assess opportunities that result from Brexit. So we're certainly watching the space, but looking for opportunities when they arise.
You're not going to change your geographic asset allocation due to these recent events, for example, you know, reduce your exposure to the UK?
No. So if anything, we actually read a piece last week, I think it was by Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, that called the UK the most contrarian both equity but also currency opportunity in the world at the moment. I mean, it's quite astounding. As things are, we have exposure to the UK, currently 12% of the PhD Global Flexible Fund and 14% of the PhD Global Equity Fund. And, you know, as the potential slow economy impacts some of the businesses, we're looking to pick up good quality businesses that ultimately become on sale.
Let's go further east, Asian markets. What are your perceptions there?
Yeah, once again, we don't want to generalize because Asia and China especially has been obviously in vogue over many years, and that also gets kind of a lot of hype. We are invested in Asia. We invested in countries like Japan and Singapore and Indonesia. So once again, we look at individual companies in those markets, but certainly Asia can't be discounted because it is a faster-growing area in the world with a large population. But we are finding opportunities in that space.
Just looking at your equity fund, you also have around 7% of the portfolio is invested in Canada. Now, that's a market we're not really au fait with here. Why the interest in Canada?
Yeah, once again, it isn't a interest in Canada per se. It's just a company that we found in Canada, a company called Brookfield Asset Management, which actually was founded in, I think it was in 1899. It's a company that's been around the block and seen a few cycles. And it's really a case of that it ticks our characteristics for investment. So we believe they've got a strong competitive advantage in the way they manage their underlying investments. And they've got a great management team. The management team collectively has over $6 billion of their own money invested into Brookfield Asset Management via various vehicles. But also it's trading at an attractive price. And your question earlier, why Canada? That often also leads to opportunities that aren't that well on the radar. Brookfield, as an example, if you take a step back, if you look at companies like Google or Facebook, you would see dozens of analysts covering those stocks. I think Brookfield, there's four analysts looking at the company. So it's a little bit below the radar, but it's a big company. It's the second largest alternative asset manager globally, and they invest into real physical assets. Mm. And earlier when we started speaking, I referred to that environment, you know, of low inflation, low interest rates that's had an impact on asset markets. It's very similar in the real asset space, like toll roads, pipelines, reservoirs, etc., that those prices have been under pressure because of that environment. So if we do see any change in underlying fundamentals, it should be disproportionately beneficial to companies like Brookfield going forward.
But if it represents 7% of your total portfolio, it seems like a pretty significant investment.
Yes, certainly. So followers of PSG Asset Management would be aware that we have two buy lists. So the one is our local South African buy list, where we have 25 of our best ideas on that list. And also globally, we also have 25 of our top ideas. And it really forces us to think of high conviction, high probable investment ideas where we really want to make money for our investors in absolute terms. So we're not worried about earning a share just because it's in the benchmark or the index, or because it's relatively cheaper than another stock. We are high conviction managers that want to own a few number of high quality companies for the long run. So Brookfield Asset Management at the end of October was our third largest position in the portfolio.
Just looking at other investments in that portfolio, Berkshire Hathaway is there. That's a quite, you know, I think in most South African-based global firms, you will see Berkshire Hathaway. Why, do you still think it's as attractive as it was a decade or two ago?
Yeah, look, yeah, I mean, obviously it's compounded extremely well over many decades, but looking at it over the more recent horizon, and you mentioned many South African investors own Berkshire Hathaway, and it sometimes comes across as a bit of a boring investment, but in our view, sometimes boring is attractive. So firstly, people that would have heard us talk about our three M's, moats, management, margin of safety, we think Berkshire Hathaway has a moat, and what it really has is a castle in the middle of that moat that is great in certain times, but especially in uncertain times. So it's got characteristics of permanent capital, of a permanent and stable shareholder base, so which really allows the company, I think they've got capital of $355 billion, to take long-term investment decisions. And also, with Berkshire Hathaway, what really attracts us to it is managed by ultimately one of the world's best investors. And still, even after the recent strong share price performance we've seen, still available at a discount of 20% or 21% to be exact to what we think is a fair intrinsic value. So even though it is well known, it is still an attractive opportunity in our eyes.
Other names, Sainsbury, that's quite popular, Cisco Systems, but what I don't see is Apple or Google. Why are you not, are you invested in those shares?
So Rick, we are invested in Apple, but we're not invested in Google. You would have obviously read in the news and over the last year, Apple seems to have fallen out of favor with the investment community. There was fears around product cycles, about the new iPhone, and that's kind of led to a valuation that we think compensates us for taking on that risk. We think Apple still has a tremendous runway of growth going forward, and also with its cash cushion that it has on the balance sheet, is now trading at a cheap valuation. So we do own Apple, but we don't own Google. Google is a company we'd like to own at some point, but we just can't find a margin of safety in the Google parent company at the moment.
So you only quite recently invested in Apple?
We first bought Apple this year, earlier in 2016.
The currency or the exchange rate is always a significant, investment, well, has an significant influence on investment returns. What is your view on the exchange rate and how should South African investors, take that into account when they invest offshore?
Yeah, look, it's extremely difficult to call the exchange rate over the short term. I think the message that we could give is that over the long run, the rand has had a depreciating trend, and also, even more importantly, the companies that are available outside of South Africa are unique, that aren't available to South African investors in Johannesburg. So it's really a case of being able to access quality companies that just can't be replicated here. And whether that's a company like Berkshire Hathaway with Warren Buffett, or, as I mentioned earlier, Brookfield Asset Management, really having that long-term track record of excellent capital allocation and growth. To companies in the portfolio, like Qualcomm, some of you may be familiar with Qualcomm for the leading patent portfolio, where they earn royalties on all the mobile devices that are sold. So to answer your question directly, it's difficult to call the currency in the short term, especially given the rand has depreciated a lot in the last few years, but for long-term investors, and especially from a risk diversification and from an opportunity set, we think that investors should allocate money to global opportunities.
Philip, just lastly, 2017 is a month away. What do you expect from next year?
Look, the equities we hold in our portfolios are trading at attractive price to values. So we actually, you would have seen the indices in the U.S. hitting record highs in the last few days. But from our portfolio, and we didn't really touch on that much earlier, where one part of the market, which has been that high quality, well-loved defensive names being very expensive, but there's another opposite of the market where things that have been a bit more uncertain, a bit more cyclical, and that part of the market, which includes companies like the global banks in our portfolios, like JP Morgan or a Wells Fargo, but also companies that are exposed to more industrial, cyclical end markets, those companies are trading at multi-year cheap valuations. So we actually quite positive on our positioning for the next year. But I got to remind people, investing into equities is a you know, it's not a one-day game.
Well, absolutely. As you've just said, you know, we are seeing some momentum stocks doing really well, and sometimes you know, the value stocks are not performing as well, and it's a case of being more patient in the volatile markets as we see now.
No, absolutely. But you know, the momentum stocks doing well, that's really been a story over the last 4 years. You know, it started in 2012, 2013, when a lot of those stocks started getting a big re-rating. But the value stocks that have underperformed have really started to outperform in 2016. And these cycles, you know, if they happen, they can last for a long time. Especially, I mean, you asked earlier the rally on the U.S., for example, U.S. banks. Even though we've seen a good rally in the U.S. banks in the last few weeks, they're still only trading at just over 1x price to book compared to longer-term averages of almost 2x. So while they're starting to work, there's still a lot of runway for these opportunities.
Thank you, Philip. That was Philip Woods. He is a portfolio manager at PSG and a co-manager of several of the PSG Global Funds.